the ports. That's a federal jurisdiction. So we have no control over it. When it comes to infrastructure, that, you know, now we're talking about a gray area. I guess technically the city of Vancouver would be in charge of, depending on the situation, but most likely the city is responsible for that investment. And we wouldn't need a lot of that investment if it wasn't for some of the actions. And I'm not being critical of the actions. I actually support a lot of these actions. But through the actions of, let's say, the federal government on immigration, guess what? We need homes for people to be able to live. We need to build more. And by the way, I'm a supporter of smart education or immigration in general. The demographics of our country are not sustainable. You know, you look at Vancouver, by 2030, 1 out of 4 people will be over the age of 65. So if we want to have a vibrant society, we need to continue on with the tradition of Canadians being, a place where immigrants come, including my parents as well. So this is not an anti-immigration thing. This is, look, we're trying to solve challenges. The federal government, they have initiatives which we support. We just need, additional support to make sure that those initiatives are successful.
I just want to circle back to the port security thing. When you say that the ports aren't policed, do you mean there is no oversight, there's no sort of security, or is it like a police presence specifically?
We need port police. There are no port police right now. So, and the city of Vancouver, doesn't have jurisdiction per se. Now, obviously, we have an integrated approach, and the VPD supports, we go in there, but it's not as, effective as it could be, and the reality is we're not checking the vast majority of the containers that go through our ports. Like, I think the number is well below 1%. So I don't know, that's a pretty ripe environment for, the transport of illegal goods and activities, and we see it on our streets.
One thing that you haven't directly mentioned, but I think a lot of things play into and that is going to be on a lot of voters' mind, is the situation south of the border and the relationship with the United States and how all of that works. Do you see that as particularly important or relevant to voters in Vancouver?
Well, if they're using it as a city of Vancouver, a determinant how people vote. I don't see it, it's probably a bigger issue on the federal level. Now, at the city of Vancouver, what we've done, and this is a joint council thing, so I don't want to get political here, we're all proud Canadians, and I think we step above that when people take shots at us as Canadians, we all stick together. And so we're doing everything we can to take this crisis that saying, a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. We're not wasting this one. And look, we can't control what the President of the United States does or does not do, but we can control how we react to it. And so we're putting together a task force on this, and we've already identified a bunch of things that we want to do as a city to make it easier for businesses to succeed during these challenging times. And so, we're on it. And I think, look, I want to acknowledge the fact that a lot of people are freaking out, and rightfully so. We're, at the margin, right? It doesn't take a lot for people to really suffer. And so we understand it. We understand that feeling, and we're all in this together. I also think that you'll see places where even if government is slow to react to this stuff, we're going to see some positive pickup. For example, Canadians are now reconsidering their plans to travel to the United States. So they either go somewhere else, which it is what it is, or they stay local. This is good for restaurants or hospitality industry. When people are buying local goods, it helps with local businesses. The Americans, it doesn't seem like they've stopped coming up here. And, you know, for exchange rate reasons, Vancouver is a lot more affordable. And so all of a sudden you have a situation where this could be good. Like, and by the way, I'm not trying to take away from the situation we're in. But we have a situation where it might actually, this might be a net positive for the hospitality and tourism industry in Vancouver. It also helps us, you know, from a longer term perspective to, you know, really reassess how we do things, and it opens up opportunities. For example, we're revisiting, you know, the inter-provincial trade barriers, which I find absolutely crazy. It doesn't make any sense. It's easier to do trade with the U.S. than it is Alberta. Like, think about that. How crazy is that? But also in the city of Vancouver, like the Lower Mainland, we have a bunch of trade barriers within our city. And so, like the greater area. So let's take this as an opportunity to get rid of all the dumb stuff. Like, if you're like a trade working on installing, let's say, alarm systems, why do you have to pull a permit in Vancouver and a different one in Burnaby, right? Or get a license to operate? It should just be one blanket license, which will make it easier for all our businesses, which will, you know, promote prosperity and opportunity.
Stepping back from specific policy issues, what would you like to see from your city's members of parliament?
You know, I actually think our members of parliament serve us quite well, regardless of a political party. And, you know, I think I'm really thankful, because it's a thankless job and they have to fly to Ottawa, and it wreaks havoc on, you know, family life and what have you. So I'm really thankful for it. And it doesn't matter which party. I wish, you know, let's just call it what it is, the power base in Eastern Canada, I wish they would listen to the West, right? We don't represent a big voting bloc to them. They're more concerned about what's happening in the GTA and Quebec. And I don't think that's fairly productive. You know, you have politicians. And by the way, I think as voters, we create this situation. So where the root cause of the problem. I wish we had more elected officials that looked at what doing what was right versus politicians who were counting votes. And for our country to be prosperous, we need a very strong West. We are the gateway to Asia. We are in the same time zone as most of the companies that are transforming the planet, being on the West Coast. And so, you know, when we look at Vancouver as the port, we're not the port of Vancouver, we're the port for Western Canada. Stuff that gets shipped out of, you know, Saskatchewan actually goes through the port of Vancouver. We're their port. And so getting the attention from the federal levels of government from a Western perspective would be great.
Great. And just to wrap up, why is this election particularly important for voters in Vancouver?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things. So from a Vancouver perspective, one of our big focuses is to, you know, solve the downtown east side. And look, I do want to say it's highly unlikely that we solve it 100%, but we want to make the area better, you know, and with the perspective of coming at it from a place of compassion and love and caring. And that's what we intend to do. The first part of the solution, or, you know, the initiative, was to stabilize that street by removing, you know, the unsafe structures that pose a danger to public safety, but also, you know, finding people shelter space who needed it, and, you know, cleaning up the parks again. And so we've done that, and we've gone after organized crime as well, the people that are actually preying on our most vulnerable populations, you know, people with mental health issues or significant substance use disorders. We're not going, you know, we're trying to support them by going after organized crime. So we've done that. One of the big things that I mentioned is we need support on bail reform for repeat offenders, or a lot of the efforts we're doing on public safety, it doesn't solve anything. And then the support on mental health care, which is the root cause of 99.9% of these challenges, if the federal government doesn't support us, we're not going to solve anything. And so, yeah, this election is really important. We need whoever's in Victoria or Ottawa to really step up. And that's the pressure that we'll put on all political parties who want to represent this country. That's what we need.
Great. Thank you for your time. And great. It was great to chat with you.
Awesome. Thank you very much for the opportunity. You know, it's great meeting you.
Great. That was my interview with Vancouver Mayor Ken Sim, giving his thoughts on the upcoming federal election, April 28th. Stay tuned to CJSF for future interviews with other mayors from around British Columbia's Lower Mainland as part of our election coverage. This interview was made possible by support from the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can find this story and others from across the country at frequencynews.ca.
It is time for Gardening with Embark, and joining me in the studio here is our resident gardening expert, Pablo Vimas from Embark Sustainability Society.
Hi, nice to be here.
Glad to have you here. We're getting into week 14.
Correct. And it's turning to be warm and nice and sunny.
Excellent. Yeah, we've had a few days of cool weather, but it's getting a little warmer. And so what do we want to be getting in the ground?
Well, as the days grow, expand, we can have more daylight, and the temperature increases, it's time to start thinking of planting potatoes, our early potatoes. Mm-hmm. So by June, we can have our first harvest with potatoes. So for all those out there that like to grow potatoes, this is the time to put potatoes in the ground.
Great. So what are things we need to think about? I mean, there are a lot of different varieties of potatoes.
Oh, yeah. So from its origins itself, there's more than 4,000 varieties of potatoes. And the ones that have developed here in Canada, they are specific for a short growing season, 6-7 months. So there is quite a lot of varieties in the garden centers. The thing that we have to take in account is how we are going to grow them, depending of the space that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have a garden bed, an in-ground plot, or a small patio with containers, so all of them will require a different variety.
Yeah.
So everybody knows that tomatoes, they have two types of varieties, mm-hmm. depending on the way how they grow, indeterminate and determinate plants. Determinate plants grow to a certain size. Indeterminate plants, they keep growing and growing and growing and get out of control if
right,
you have one more plant.
Vines, and you got to have a cage and support it and step it up.
Yeah, correct. So those are keep growing and growing. Mm-hmm. Well, they determinate, reach certain size, and they stay like that.
Yeah.
With potatoes, we don't see that because potatoes grow in the ground.
Right, but they have the same distinction.
The same distinction. So
yeah.
There are plants that grow to same size. The determinate plants grow to same size. However, the potatoes are all growing in one layer
mm-hmm.
underground.
Right.
Okay. And with the indeterminate plants, the plant grows, and if we add more soil or heal up soil around the stems,
mm-hmm.
from those stems shoots will pop up.
Right.
And at the end of each root, we have a tuber, a new potato. So the more we pile up soil around the plant, the more roots, the more potatoes. So these potatoes grow in different layers,
Right. So as the plant grows, you pile up plant or soil against it.
Yes.
And then it just starts putting out new
roots
from the stalk.
Yes, from the stalk, yeah.
And then you just sort of keep doing that.
Yes, keep doing that. So we have potatoes from the very bottom where you put the seed potato all the way until there is soil.
Right. The determinant types of potato, they won't do that. They grow to a certain height, and if you keep piling soil up,
there was nothing. You will have your potatoes underneath a large pile of soil. So, considering that, is how we need to select our potatoes if we are going to grow.
Mm-hmm.
So, if I'm growing in containers,
yeah.
I will use an indeterminate mm-hmm. type of potato. So, if I put my seed potato at the bottom of the container, shoots and stalks come, you keep piling soil, more roots, more potatoes, and as you fill the container, have all potatoes inside
all the way
container.
Down to the bottom.
But if you use a determinated one, you will put your seed potato at the bottom and will be only one layer of potatoes.
With a lot of dirt on top.
Correct. And that comes when you have to harvest, mm-hmm. when you are harvesting, and you realize, like, why am I not having potatoes? Why is there so few potatoes? It's because we haven't used the wrong variety.
So it's important to figure out what you're working with.
Correct. Yeah. So the seed houses, they market the early potatoes, so there will be the determinate potatoes as early, so only one layer.
Yeah.
And the late potatoes, or late season, as they call, that will be the indeterminate potatoes. Just try to keep it clear. So sometimes they are the same name for the...
They're just all early potatoes.
Yes. So we try to, the advice will be to grow your potatoes in the both systems and see which one it is, and it produces more potatoes.
Right.
For I like to have the early potatoes, like a Warba or Yukon Gold, which grows are determinate potatoes, to grow in garden beds, in raised garden beds, because I don't have to empty the garden bed, so empty the soil to put my seed potato.
Mm-hmm.
And as the plant grows, keep topping up.
Yeah.
And later I had to dig up again the soil for harvesting. So having all these potatoes at the same level in one uniform layer is easy for us just to harvest, dig.
Right.
Yeah. So that's...
And that makes sense when you have more room.
Yeah. If you have more room, I think for raised beds and community gardens, early potatoes is the best.
Yeah.
And for containers or potato bags, we can use the indeterminates, so we make sure that vertically we have lots of potatoes.
With the indeterminates, there's some different ways you can approach it in terms of, I guess, making it sort of easier on yourself, but also maxing out what you can do.
Yes. So it's all about how much effort you want to put. As I say, if you go indeterminate in a garden, in a raised garden bed, you will have to dig out the soil.
Yeah.
And top it up as, I mean, fill it up as the plant grows, but at the end of the day, when you have to harvest, you have to dig it up very deep, because where the potatoes are.
Yeah, but you're going to get a lot of potatoes.
You will get lots of potatoes, indeed. And that is the satisfying thing, that they get in contact with the soil and start digging the potatoes, looking for that treasure that is in there. That's more exciting.
Right. So what are the different varieties of each type, so people kind of know what they're looking for.
Yeah, so for instance, if you are for a determinate kind of potato, we have the Yukon Gold, the Norland, the Fingerling, the Russet Norcota, Viking, and the Warba, which is very much common in our garden centers. If you're looking for an indeterminate, so ones that you are going to grow well in containers and in potato bags, you look for the Russet Burbank, Da Vinci, Banana, and Nicola. These are the ones that I have come. Of course, you can have more varieties, and if you get hands on a variety that you don't know which way it goes, just use both systems and
see what happens.
Yeah.
And then you'll know for the future.
That's right. We use potatoes, which call seed potato.
Yeah.
So that's the way we plant. We don't use proper seeds.
Right.
Which is called potato seed. So the proper seeds is called potato seeds. Seed potato means it's just a tuber from the last year harvest. So when you are ordering potatoes, you have to be careful what you are ordering.
Right.
There are the mistakes that you say, potato seeds, and what you get is tiny little seeds.
Yeah, you get really different results starting from the seeds. It's not like other plants.
No, it's a very different result, because you don't know what variety is, how it looks, and it will take you quite a while. So the first year you will put the seeds, and a plant will grow, and new tubers will grow up, and from those tubers will be different size, big ones, and then you have to have those tubers. And for the next season, you have to plant those tubers. So it's one season, second year, and for a third year to have a harvest. So it's quite slow.
So it's quite a process. It's, you're not going to get a crop this season if you go for potato seeds. You're going to be working at it for a few years before you get started. Yeah. Alternatively, with seed potatoes.
Correct.
That's where things are going to happen right away for you, and that's what you want.
Correct, yes. Yeah, so seed potatoes, if you have a potato in your hand, Those potatoes have dimples, which we call eyes.
Yep.
And from those potato eyes, we will have a shoot, which is a from which we have stems and roots coming. So our potato can have five to eight different eyes, so all shoots coming from there.
Do you recommend getting seed potatoes? Or because you can just take your potatoes if you still have them and use that to plant. Is there different results you get from that?
Oh, that's a good question. We tend to get potatoes which has been ensured that they are healthy, not mm-hmm. with viruses, and they've been treated for storage. But now and then, we forget our potatoes at the bottom of the cupboard. And when we find out, they are with white shoots ready to...
Yep, I've seen that.
Why not to plant? So there is a potato, is a seed. So we just plant it and see what happens. It's a good experience as well, that.
Excellent. Well, now we're getting the plants in the ground. We also need to be taking care of them properly and watering properly.
Correct. So watering, that's a very... tricky thing with potatoes. One thing that we encourage here to our gardeners in this field is you water the soil, not the plant.
Right.
Most of the TV advertisement is you see people watering, spraying the leaves of the plant. Unfortunately, the leaves don't take water. The roots are the ones that need water.
Mm-hmm.
So we water the soil and try to keep the leaves of the plants dry. And particularly with potatoes and tomatoes and all the summer crops, because all of them have tiny little hairs. The leaves are covered with tiny little hairs.
Mm-hmm.
If you take a close look at potatoes, tomatoes, corn, beans, they all have little hairs.
Right, and that traps the water.
We'll trap the water. Indeed, if you just spray, they will trap the water. On the contrary, if you see the cold plants, like cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, the water just slides.
Yeah.
They don't retain. So high humidity and high temperature, which is coming over the summer,
mm-hmm.
a nice environment for bacteria and fungi to grow. So you don't want to provide that environment for diseases to show up in your crop. So
right.
keep the leaves dry, but the soil moist.
Excellent. Well, that's some really good advice for people starting off their potatoes this season. So you got to be paying attention to whether they're determinate or indeterminate types, so you know what to do with them.
Yes.
Once you got them in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And how easy is it to know that?
Ooh. that's not so easy. As I mentioned, the seed companies, they just market as a early mid-season and late season. So
right.
the early season, certainly they are the determinate plants.
Right.
Or determinate types.
And as you also said, try both approaches.
Correct.
And see what you're getting.
Yeah. Yeah, try both approaches and see what comes. And, yeah, do a little bit of Googling. Always there is some information there, and people's happy to share.
And imagine if you're trying it out, you know, you can kind of check after a little while. You're not waiting until harvest time. You can pile some more dirt, see what happens.
Yep.
You know, gently dig down a bit and see whether things are happening or not.
Yes.
And if it's indeterminate, you're going to start seeing more roots coming out and whatnot, and ultimately some potatoes on the end.
Yeah.
And if you're not, you're just going to see a stalk sitting there with dirt. And you'll, excellent. Thanks so much for joining us today, Pablo.
Well, it's nice to be here to share some of our experiences.
Pablo Vimes of Embark Sustainability. He's the gardening manager for Embark and our expert here at CJSF on your gardens. How do people find out more about Embark?
Oh, yes, you can visit our studio, our offices are located in the Student Union building, the first floor, or you can follow us through our social media channels at Embark Sustainability.
Excellent. Thanks so much for joining us. See you next week.
See you next week.
Thanks to Pablo Vimes for coming in and talking to us about gardens again this week. Democracy Now! Is coming up in about 5 minutes or so, but before we get to that, we got Peter R.H. What are you talking to? Talking
well,
to us about
we,
this
we
week,
had a liberal, and he was an acting MP, and he was going for re-election.
Mm-hmm.
And I think on their social media, have Paul Chang, I think that's how you pronounce it.
They've actually had a lot of candidates drop out so far this election.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it was for not the same reason why Paul Chang decided to drop out. So what it
tell
was,
us about it.
Well, what it was that there's a conservative. Tay, T-E-Y, and He has been targeted by the Hong Kong police for allegedly breaking the city's national security law here in Canada. Now, this has been talked about for a while, that we have the mainland Chinese police station, supposedly. Mm-hmm. In fact, the Fifth Estate did something, not so much about that, but about how the Canadian government has been at times colluding with the mainland Chinese government. Now, So what happened was that he actually, on their social media, this who's I guess still an MP until somebody else gets his seat,
but no longer a candidate.
Yeah, no longer a candidate. He said, "Oh well, this guy, why don't you go over to the police? They're acting have a reward of whatever it was, $10,000, $100,000, and." In my opinion, what Mark Carney sort of said, you're out immediately. He said, oh, I accept the man's apology, and that's okay. And he actually, mm-hmm. I say, if it wasn't for the tariff problem, the Conservatives would have won the election on this thing, because Mark Carney should have said, no, you're out. He said, I accept his apology.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to do a little editorialization. Usually I try to go with the facts, but I'm going to do a little editorialization. So Trump is like fascism, like he's Adolf Hitler. The general kind of internationalism was the people of the World Economic Forum, which Mark Carney was, which the MP for SFU, Terry Beach, was educated there, and he was advertising it. That's sort of like Stalin, I guess. It's the international kind of thing. So we're fighting Hitler right now. I guess we have to collaborate a little bit with this internationalism, mm-hmm. which is not so great anyway. I mean, that was sort of like the, you know, like the what they call it, the conspiracy stuff. I mean, a lot of it is sort of a bit not quite what the reality is. It's sort of like, I don't think a one-world government is ever going to be implemented, but there has been serious globalism over the years. But then it's interesting that Trump is the one that's sort of countering it. But he's countering it sort of not in a very good way, is he? Now, interesting, it's been a while since I checked out InfoWars, and I checked it out about a month ago. And Alex Jones is just so happy about the concept of Canada being taken over by the United States. Now, what's sort of interesting is he kept saying, the internationalists are taking a takeover our sovereign nations. But now he is happy about the United States taking us over. So, I mean, that's not very good, is it, Alex?
Well, I think that represents a lot of the, you know, I mean, a lot of what guys like Alex Jones do is just, they're basically just trolling. They're trying to rile people up, so they don't really need to be consistent, because
they just
need to play to people's
worst aspect. Believe that garbage. You see, he is believing it. See, that's the issue. And the thing was, I thought to myself, well, you know, I'm sort of in his camp a little bit, like, but it's not quite how he makes it out to be. It's interesting that, I mean, it's sort of interesting. It could be that if the United States totally isolates himself from everybody, then the internationalism, which will exclude the United States, which maybe that'll be kind of a one-world government excluding the United States, will all be part of that kind of a donut hole. Kind of a thing, but
well, you know, at least on a trade basis, that might happen. Back to the candidates, though. As I was saying, there's been a lot of candidates have been dropped in this election. I don't know if more than previous, and it'd be interesting to look into. But it does seem to be that if pretty much anything in your past, a little bit controversial, comes up, people get dropped. And I think partly that's because it's so easy to make hay out of things like that, and very difficult to defend against them. And I think campaigns just go, forget it. We're not going to even allow these distractions to be part of it. Like, bang, you're gone, and we stay on message.
Yes, and the show's just about over.
And I guess the very quick point is that, you know, I think perhaps the lesson that all the campaigns have taken from Mark Carney's initial response, or his response, was that you just allow that story to continue living if you don't snuff it out right away when a candidate gets in trouble like that.
But I guess, I mean, as I said, in previous elections, the Liberals would have lost, but people feel that Mark Carney has the background, maybe, right. which may be correct.
That's it. Democracy Now! Is up next.
Okay. Hi, I'm